The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the house on this Memorial Day, full day of baseball. So we'll talk to Paul Spohr coming up, Raheem Palmer, talk NBA with us from The Ringer. Looking forward to talking to Raheem on the show. Wes Reynolds joins us as he always does on Mondays. And Andy McNeil, game six tonight between the Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights. While we're looking over here at the Heat and the Celtics in possible history, we've been taken off the scent of the Knights and the Stars. The Stars, sneaky, trying to make history of their own in hockey.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be that guy who's complaining about something that probably there's nothing we can do about.
Oh, they're all at the same time
again?
But
we're on at the same time again.
So when I was a kid, Michael Jordan always played on Memorial Day in the afternoon, and I was on the East Coast. Why we got to do this night thing?
I don't know.
Why?
Yeah, I mean, we're out here on the West Coast saying
that. Yes. It was awesome when that happened. Every single Memorial
Plus,
Day.
Plus, like, it's obvious, isn't it? Like, I'm not obvious. I know everybody knows me as an NBA guy, but, like, Game 7 over Game 6. Like, you move Game 6 earlier in the day.
Yeah. Hockey not really trying to acquiesce, I guess. So, let's start, before we get to the end, because I do want to relive and talk about Game 6 between the Heat and the Celtics, because objectively, let's say we didn't have any bets. I do, on the Heat. But let's say we didn't. Objectively, one of the great finishes in NBA history, given the stakes.
Just incredible.
And we'll talk about some of the things that happened that some people were complaining about at the end and whether or not those complaints were justified or not. But first, let's highlight good betting and bad betting. Your good bet. So here's the thing. So Kelly and I do a show, and it's 2 hours static every morning, Monday through Friday. And so there is this thing when you do a show, it's funny, that if you don't talk about your bets while you're on the show, then when you come back the following Monday, you say, hey, look, I won this bet. There's always going to be a few people out there who are like, oh, what do you mean? You just said on the show. Yeah, we actually make bets in our real lives, mainly.
Yeah, when we're not on the clock. Yep.
So Kelly Bidlin did not talk about this on the show Friday, but I want to give him his props. Emiliano Grillo, which, by the way, over the years we've pronounced Grillo, but apparently it's Grillo, or apparently he says... He's good with Americans saying that because he doesn't want to confuse them further.
So did you hear that?
Oh, no, I did. This was in the past he
yes,
said that.
Yes, okay. I think I've heard him say that in the past as well. I'm pretty sure Nance said it about seven different ways yesterday.
Okay.
So yeah, you're okay.
So whatever it is. I think Argentina is usually Grigio. But anyway, Emiliano Grillo, we'll go with what he wants us to call him, wins the Schwab. And Kelly, you had him at what number?
90-1.
Good for you. Wes Reynolds had him as well?
Wes had him as well. Yep. Yeah, so, yeah, hopefully anybody that listened to Long Shots, you heard us talk him through. And I talked about him on here on Wednesday. I had a very, very large top 20 bet. I did, yes, end up adding an outright on him later that day.
Good for you.
It was a very small outright. Emiliano Grillo hasn't won in 8 years. almost didn't yesterday.
How are you feeling? A two-stroke lead going into the 18th. And without hesitation, my man pulls out the driver, which I guess isn't, you know, a terrible decision on that hole. But he proceeds to slice it like you and I slice it big time when we go hack up a golf course. I'll speak for you. Sorry about that. And he puts that ball in what can only be described as, I've never seen this in a golf tournament, like a lazy river. It's yep. Like this miniature creek where the ball then just went backwards in this stream for, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah, and it was...
No one knew what was going on. The announcers had no idea what was going on.
I'm a golf guy. I can't sit here today, even Gil, and explain to you exactly what happened rule-wise every step of the way with that. Because even his drop afterward, him choosing to drop it on the cart
on
path...
On the concrete, yeah.
Which he did. It was his choice. He could have dropped it on the grass. But yes, that was it's not a water area designated because it could be dry. It's just an offshoot for, like, extra water on the course. And I'm sure, like, porta potty urine or something like that.
Awesome.
That's all I kept thinking when I saw it. It was like, I wouldn't want to touch that ball. And, yeah, that kept going back towards the tee box. They were making it sound like if it stopped, he could hit it.
On the fly, he could make a decision.
I'm pretty sure I heard an announcer say he could hit it while the ball was moving,
I think I heard that,
which
too.
Which I don't know how that's possible.
Anyway, double bogeys, 18, ends up in a playoff with Adam Schenk. And the reason he ends up in the playoff with just Shank is because Harry Hall ends up putting his ball in the 18th in the drink, which, by the way, I can't believe it got to the drink, but it went through the trees into the drink. And so he ended up sloughing off. And so on the second hole of a playoff, and by the way, good karma for Grillo when he was letting kids like hit his driver on the first hole.
That was really cool.
And he ends up winning it on the second hole. He sticks a first of all, he was getting every bounce imaginable on the last couple holes. Everything was kicking left. I mean, one could only hope. It was three shots that kicked left for him, and finally the one that's put him in position to win.
Gil, as an experienced Grillo better here,
sure.
That means someone who's lost a lot of money to Grillo, so we finally have broken even, and I'm maybe a little bit on the black now. I'm betting Grillo outrights over the years. Let me walk you through his whole weekend, okay?
Yeah.
Nothing was unlucky about what happened on 18. I was fully expecting something like that to happen because this is what Emiliano Grillo does. Like, he makes things interesting, whether to the good or to the bad. This is the type of guy that he was. I was not counting my money. I was sitting there on my couch thinking, all right, like, the only thing I've got going for me here is that he's getting chased by Harry Hall and Adam Shank.
That's right.
Like, and somehow I trust him more than the two guys chasing him. But him going right, I wasn't shocked at. The Banks, man. It was between Saturday and Sunday. I think he had six balls.
Everything was a bank
that
shot.
That banked and banked the right way, right to left, including two of them that were off trees. He went so far right, hit a tree, and it went back in the fairway.
It was faded. He was supposed to win that. And afterwards, he said, you know what, just he had a child. He's like, I just didn't care when I double bogeyed. So good for you. Good for everybody who had that bet. One last thing about golf before we get to the tennis, which is, you know, I never had noticed when a LIV tournament came up on my guide. And yesterday during the Schwab, I noticed that, because, and I don't know, it was because D.C. caught my eye or whatever on the CW, whatever, when I put the guide on. I was like, oh, the LIV tournament's in D.C. I forgot, you know, let me see what this is at. And they've got, of course, you know, a who's who of golfers playing in this tournament. If you had told me before this whole LIV thing happened, hey, all of these big-name golfers are going to move to this other tour, you're going to have the opportunity to watch it against like a rando tournament where Emiliano Grillo, Harry Hall, and Adam Shank are at the top of the leaderboard, which would you think you'll end up watching? I would have 100% of the time said, oh, the tournament in D.C., where I'm from, with all the big-name golfers. You know what, Kelly? I couldn't have cared less.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, if I had a bet on it, maybe that would have been a different story. I'm sure it would have been. But sans a wager on that, it's amazing that that's what my reaction is. And I think that's probably widely spread.
I think so, too. But it's more interesting for me to hear that from someone like you, because you know why I don't bet it. I don't bet it because we don't get
data.
Stats from them. I don't get data from them,
right,
which I rely all my golf betting on. So that's why I don't. But I hear you. If I was an average guy, I think I'd probably be attracted to it too. But it doesn't surprise me to hear not.
Yeah.
One other thing I want to hit real quick on golf before we move on, Gil. This is a great case study in this tournament this past weekend on why we don't, like, when you hear Matt, myself, Wes, on Long Shots, or when I'm breaking down golf here, there is a lot of tournaments that I don't factor putting at all or very little. This tournament was a great example. Emiliano Grillo, he's been putting well recently. Known as one of the worst putters on tour, though. One of the best ball strikers, one of the worst putters. What does he do this weekend? He ends up having a below-average week for him ball striking-wise, but his putter carries him to a victory. Emiliano Grillo over those four rounds. Your boy, Scotty Scheffler.
My boy.
Another week, Gil. Another week.
He's amazing.
Where he is tops tee to green, not even close. And the putter, just if he could just make a couple, dude, he's winning this tournament going away. But he has a terrible, terrible putting week and loses over a stroke to the field putting, and that's the difference. But he's still right there.
It's amazing,
right? So like, that's the point. Why do we not factor that stuff in as much? Because the tee to green matters so much more.
Yep, and it's a great call about putting, and it's also, you know, we said on this show a year ago about why aren't you betting Scheffler in every tournament? I don't know why. He's just that good. That's the good that Kelly had Emiliano Grillo. Here's the bad. Here's my latest stretch of sports betting. So Julia Riera at plus 127 in a tournament, a clay court tournament last week. She loses in a third set tiebreaker 8-6. We had our plus 127. Then I had the Heat money line in game six.
Oh, no.
And then yesterday I had John Isner at plus 199. He loses a fifth set tiebreaker 11-9. So that's the kind of run I'm on. So, yeah. So not a fun start. Not a fun start. And by the way, it was just bad yesterday. We lost a total by a game also. So in the end, we got off the schneid this morning with Sloane Stephens as a plus 115 dog. She got home. So what a 1-4 start to the French Open. But, you know, with some results that if even the Isner one changes, we would now be in the black. That's all it takes. Just that 11-9 finish. So 1-4 sounds a lot worse than it is, but we'll get there. And we have three more plays today. I forgot one other thing. We had Tomas Martin Echeverri this morning, and his opponent took his toys and went home. So some people who bet that did win because it was a set in, but I never count those that don't complete as an official play. So some people are 2-4 with the play, but I'll count it as 1-4 because that match didn't finish. So some people
that's a house rule. Depending on the sports.
Depending
rule?
On the house rules. Okay. I only count them at the ones that grade upon finish. Some people did end up winning that because one set was complete and Echeverri was up. So it's just this unbelievable, relentless bang, 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 bang of bad fortune in betting. We do have three more plays today at the French. Again, these will take place. I think one of them is about to start in about 20 minutes. The others are a little later. But Elizabeth Mandlik on the ladies' side and Elisabetta Cocciaretto. As you know, if you listen to Beating the Book podcast or if you've listened to this show many times before, I'm very high on Cocciaretto. I think she's very underrated, especially on clay. And then Davidovich Fokina and Arthur Fil, who we talked about last week a lot, over 35.5. Again, these plays have been on the VSiN.com picks page in some cases for 2 days now and in some cases for 1 day. So always check out, be a subscriber, VSiN.com/picks. So Mandlik Cocciaretto in the over in the Fields Davidovich Fokina match. Coming back, NBA talk next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Won't take you but a few seconds and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. We get tweets at Beating the Book. I always love reading tweets. It's such a great part of the show, especially, we tend to lean towards the funny. We don't care if you murder us as long as you're funny. But insightful people, I'll always be grateful for how closely people listen to everything on the show. But I want to read this one that just came down here 10 minutes ago, Kelly. This is from Bob P. He said, "Hey, Gil, I just wanted to say thanks for indirectly being a part of saving my life. On Friday, I had a medical emergency involving shortness of breath and recalled your story of the blood clot issue from your surgery. I, too, had recent knee surgery. It prompted me to call 911. It turned out I had several clots in my lungs, which required immediate surgery. Well, it saved my life, so thank you not only for your work, but for some very important real-life stories. Thank you, Bob. I am so happy that you are okay." If we never do another thing on this show.
For real. That's incredible.
Great to hear that. And that just a
call. You just tweeted that in?
Literally 13 minutes ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so
incredible.
Listen, this is for those who have not listened for long. I had Achilles. I ruptured my Achilles, second one in my life. But it's one thing to rupture Achilles at 27 versus when you're 50. And I ruptured it playing tennis. And all of a sudden I came in here the next, I ruptured it on a Tuesday, but I got the surgery on Friday. I came in here the whole next day. I used the scooter, pushing myself around. By the end of the week, I couldn't breathe that well. And the following Monday, so this is 10 days after the surgery, I had to throw it to parlay earlier than I wanted to, or guest earlier than I wanted to. I go home. I say, I can only speak for 30 seconds, and I couldn't. And then I have to gasp for breath. I had a blood clot, massive pulmonary saddle embolism on top, and basically saved my life going in there. And they were kind of laughing at me, like, you're not a bit. Anyway. Those stories, please always pay attention to your body. And I'm so glad for Bob P that happened there. Glad you're with us. Glad you're still listening. And thanks for the kind note. So for everybody else, pay attention to your bodies.
Yeah. I remember that week with you, man. That was scary. Like I mean, I can't even imagine what you were feeling. But there was us around here of like, man, that is some scary crap.
Said, sir, you're 24 to 48 hours away from not talking to me right now. I was like, okay. He meant kaput.
I remember you on your little wheelie scooter too.
Well, you know what I said. You know what I said to the surgeon afterwards? I was like, "Hey, has anybody done a study on these like scooter things where my just surgically repaired leg is bent for 2 weeks right after the surgery?" And the guy was like, "Yeah, I never thought about that." I was like, "Thanks, thanks, Mr. Goodwrench of the Achilles. Maybe you should." As opposed to crutches, which I did back in the day. All right, I'll tell you who else is on the verge of being kaput, either the Celtics or the Heat tonight in the Eastern Conference. As the Celtics try to make history, 150 previous times that a team down 3-0 has tried to come back from a 3-0 deficit and has failed. Of course, not many of them ever got to a seventh game. In fact, the Celtics are now just the fourth team to do so. And none of the previous three got to try it at home in a Game 7. The Celtics are touchdown favorites tonight. Touchdown favorite. Celtics by 7. Pregame total all the way down to 203.
Yeah.
You should think about that, first of all.
I think it's a little too much, but I'm not running to bet the over, Gil. That's the one I was really looking at. Game 6 was betting that under, and that one had moved about 4 points from Game 5. So that was, okay, so that closed like 207, 208, I think it was. Now we're down to 203. This is a significant movement in the total market. But it's a game 7. I get it. These teams have had less and less possessions each game. I got in on a live under in that last game. That was a nice hit. I wouldn't be betting the over, but the movement is a lot. It's a lot. And the spread correlates, right? I think people are going to talk a lot about the spread moving and that the number dropping from about 8.5, 9 where it was last game to 7. Well, if you're dropping the total, spread's got to come down a little bit too. Having said all that, I like the Celtics tonight.
There's the bottom line. By the way, I'm super excited for the Drew Densicks of the world who bet the Celtics to win it. I'd be super excited for him if I didn't have the Heat bet, so you understand.
Mm-hmm.
But he bet him after they were down 3-0. As did JVT, but JVT bet him to win the whole thing.
Yeah, he's gonna roll in with like a, or if they win, he's rolling in with a. We were talking about this in the pot. He's got like 15-1 on them, right? And just when he said the number, it just clicked in my brain. When the heck could you have gotten 15-1 on the Celtics in the past like 2 years?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, it's been about 2 years.
Would you be super duper surprised if the Heat won?
Absolutely
tonight?
Not.
I wouldn't either.
Absolutely not.
I wouldn't either. Let's relive this real quick because we didn't get a chance to after game 6, so we'll get to the final minutes. But first quarter, Boston led by as many as 8. By 5 at the end of the quarter, Brown had 10. Remember, Jaylen Brown started that game on fire. He was 5 of 6. Tatum had 9 at the end of the first quarter. Caleb Martin was keeping the Heat in it with 12 on 5 of 6 shooting at 5 boards. Second quarter, Boston led by as many as 11, but they only led by 4 at the half, a 12-5 run down the stretch for the Heat. Tatum had 25 at that point. It was 11 of 11 from the line. Martin didn't score in the second quarter. He still had 14, but he had 9 boards. Boston was 3 of 15 from 3 in the first half. Miami was 9 of 15. Boston made 6 more free throws. Had 6 more attempts, 6 more free throws. How could Boston have possibly been leading? Miami only made 9 2-point field goal attempts the entire first half. Third quarter, Miami was in the bonus within 3 minutes. And if you're a Miami backer, you're like, oh, this is it. This is where they run. But they didn't. In the bonus the whole quarter, and then they got nothing in that exchange. Remember where they got a free throw and the ball on that tech?
Yep.
5-minute delay to penalize Miami for getting fouled away from the ball. They got within 2, though, with the ball before that at 62-60, and then couldn't capitalize on that. Then Boston ran them out again, led by as many as 13, led by 7 at the end of the quarter. Tatum didn't score in third. Martin had 21 at this point. Bam and Butler were 5 of 29 combined. Miami was 9 of 41 in the paint after 3, the worst under Spoelstra. Fourth quarter, Heat took their first lead at 83-82. How they were able to do that was mind-boggling. First lead since 11-9, but Boston went up 98-88. So they had the lead for a fleeting moment, and then Boston crushed them again. Boston went up 98-88 with under 5 minutes left and had the ball with that lead. Under 3 minutes left, Boston led by 9, 191. But here would come the Miami Heat. Bucket by Vincent, 3 by Butler. Then 1 of 2 from the line from Butler. Rebound by Vincent on the miss. Duncan Robinson misses a wide-open 3 that would have tied it at 100. Then Brown hits 1 of 2 free throws. Butler gets 3 the hard way. fouled by Horford. It's 101-100. It's a one-point game. The Heat get the ball back, closing 30 seconds down one. Robinson from three. No, again. Oh, Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, those were two really good looks he had.
That one with 22 seconds left. Smart hits one of two free throws. It's 102-100. And then the moment that everybody was talking about, Butler fouled by Horford in the corner going up for a three. He hits them all to give Miami the lead, 103-102 with 3 seconds left. But let's talk about that for a second, because a lot of Celtics backers were like, oh, he double dribbled. No, he didn't. He lost the ball. Mm-hmm. And by the way, upon review, the NBA says exactly that. So stop with the double dribble. He didn't do that. The one thing that was questionable was there were 2.1 seconds on the clock, and they gave him three shots. It was tough to reconcile those two things because you're like, wait, how could it also be a three and then you're adding 0.9? But upon review, what they said is the first hand that Horford touched Butler with was with 3 seconds left, and I guess they called it on his way up at that point. That's the only explanation.
Yeah, I don't fully understand it still, though, Gil, because, okay, if you're going to tell me there was three left, then it should have been the upward motion begin when he was still in the two-point range,
yeah,
right?
I thought so.
So it's either 2.1 and a 3, or it's 3 seconds and a 2.
Thank you. That's what I thought. That was kind of my conclusion, too, but they're saying, no, it was right.
Yep.
Marcus Smart shot goes in and out with 3 seconds left. He took the shot. It was sort of like a turnaround jumper in and out, and the ball bounces right to Derek White, who was alert and running towards the hoop. He puts it back into the buzzer, getting it out of his hands with 0.1 left. Celtics win 104-103 in what is the most stunning ending to an NBA playoff game of that magnitude I can remember.
Me too. It was incredible.
Fourth team in NBA history to force a game seven. None of the first three had a chance to do it at home. Tatum 31-11-5. 15 of 15 from the line. Brown 26-10. Butler 24-11-8. Martin for the Heat 21-15. Celtics were only 7 of 35 from three. The rare game that you can overcome that. But they were 71% from two in the first half and 66% from two in the second half. And only 19 two-pointers from the Heat the entire game. Bam and Butler, 9 of 36. So who looks back at that game more justifiably and says, well, if we had hit more, like, is it Boston? If we had hit more threes, we would crush them. Or is it the Heat who are like, Bam and Butler were 9 of 36. If they just give us anything, we crush you. Who's got the more justified way to look at it? They both do, kind of.
Oh, they both got a case. I'd say Boston, but
the threes always count, I think, in the end. Man, is this going to be good. We'll talk to Raheem Palmer about this a little later on. Little hockey break with Andy McNeil next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Take your sports betting game to the next level this summer with the VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now for only $9.99 and get access to everything we do, including daily pro picks on all the summer action, including NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our team of top handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access, and pro tools like our exclusive betting splits showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Start betting smarter. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe and sign up now. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, did you have Joseph Newgarden to win his first Indianapolis 500 on his 12th attempt? You don't have your mic. Say again. Oh. Kelly said, obviously. His mic is out. Oh, his mic's out. Kelly screaming in the background. Oh, well, there's your Indy 500 moment. Maybe we'll talk to Wes Reynolds about it a little later on. How about some hockey? Andy McNeil joins us from north of the border in Edmonton, Alberta, to talk a little pucks with us. And I said earlier, Andy, I go, while everybody's watching the Heat and the Celtics here, thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be history. Quietly, and I do mean quietly, the Dallas Stars are like, oh, we're still here. They were down 3-0, got the game 4 win in OT, and then 2-2 tie. They were down 1-0. They were down 2-1 against the Golden Knights in game number 5, and then they rolled them at the end. They win it 4-2. Stars are now -125 favorites in game 6 tonight. What are you thinking? What are you betting? Anything?
I'm not betting a side here, at least not yet. I mean, my projections say Dallas wins this game about around 54% of the time, so kind of in the midpoint neutral range there for the money line. But I've got some player props, and we can get to those now or in a bit. But just a general thought about the series. I mean, you know, Dallas has played really well over the last few games outside of the shenanigans that took place in the, you know, at the start of game three. But a lot has changed in the last couple of games, and the Stars have really kind of taken the series over. Obviously, they've got to get this next one, but the odds are in their favor, and there's a better chance than not that we're going to see a game seven now in this series. And I know last week you asked me, you know, what would a price on the Vegas Golden Knights versus the Florida Panthers be? And I said around 60% in favor of the Vegas Golden Knights. And I didn't have a price for Dallas because I didn't think it was all that realistic.
And then I asked you just for giggles, what would a Stars Panthers series price be? Yeah.
Yeah. My guess was around minus 130. And that is where I'm at. I have the Stars winning a potential series versus the Panthers about 57% of the time. So as far as the player props go, Wyatt Johnson has been a guy that I've been kind of going after on the shot props dating back to the Seattle series. And he's really been a force in this series. He leads all players in shots on goal. He's only not registered four shots in one game so far in the series. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with his in terms of his line mates and whatnot, because he was playing with Jamie Benn and Evgeny Dodonov, Dodonov was injured and Ben was suspended. Obviously, he had one game where he was, you know, with Sagan and Marchment and developed quite a bit of chemistry there. So I don't really think it matters where he ends up. I like him to go over his shot prop 2.5 at even money. The Stars are on home ice. They should have the ice tilted in their direction again. And I also like him to score an anytime goal, both small half unit bets. But at plus 275, I like Johnson to score an overtime or an anytime goal, sorry. And as on the Vegas side, I like what Alex Pietrangelo is doing right now. He leads all players in the series, or he's second actually in the series in shot attempts with 33. He's hit the net 9 times on 17 attempts in his last 2 games. You can bet him over 2.5 shots on goal at plus 145. So I really like, you know, the fact that he's been that guy that's attempting a lot of shots in the series and finally finding a way to get them to the net these last couple of games. So at 2.5, I like him at plus 145 as well.
Can we just spend 45 seconds to a minute on this? Because we had this discussion on Primetime Action, and Matt Kelly and I were just wowed by this. But the whole definition of shots on goal, for those who are new to betting hockey and they happen to bet one of your shots on goal props, it is a mind-numbing sort of activity, because a shot that hits the post is not a shot on goal, correct? Because it's not technically on goal. So it becomes a very subjective exercise, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I mean, I think you see it a lot in the regular season too. There are some scorekeepers in some arenas that put a lot more subjectivity into determining what's a shot and what isn't a shot. So it can be a headache sometimes for sure, especially when you think a player got a shot and it looked like he did and they don't mark it down as one. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a little better in the playoffs, I feel like.
Okay. Couple other things. So this would, we talked about in basketball, no one's ever come back from a 3-0 deficit in a best of 7 series in the history of the NBA. 150 have tried. In hockey, it has happened 4 times. 1942 Maple Leafs. We mentioned this a few weeks ago on the show because I think there was something in the first round where this was a possibility as well. 75, the Islanders defeated the Penguins. That was a series, for those who are old enough to remember, where Billy Smith got taken out of the net for the Islanders, and they came back and they won it. 2010, the Flyers beat the Bruins in the second round after being down 3-0, and it was the Flyers barely won game 4.
They were down 3-0 in game 7.
And down
3-0
in game 7. That's right. And then the last one was in 2014. The Kings beat the Sharks after being down 3-0. That was really two different Jonathan Quicks. He was terrible in the first 3 games, then he was unbelievable in the last 4. If this happens in this series, the next time we do this, what's my brief headline on this one?
Oh, man, I think it's really just, you know, Knights kind of don't find out, can't finish it. I mean, it was there for the taking, and it still is, of course, but I don't, you know, I think these games have been so close. They could have gone either way. They've been, as much as Dallas has dominated at times over the last few games, I think, you know, specifically the last couple of games, look how close they were, right? In game 4, Ottinger and Aiden Hill had to be perfect. And they were basically perfect in game 5 as well. And it wasn't until Hill had that little blunder on the what ended up being the winning goal. I don't think you can blame him for the fourth goal that was, you know, pretty much a result of a terrible turnover behind the Vegas Golden Knights net. But yeah, it's just you know, it was just things turned the Stars' way, and they gave the Stars time to find their scoring touch. You know, Jason Robertson came into the series with just 2 goals in the playoffs, and he leads the series in goals now. So that's bad news for the Vegas Golden Knights. They just gave the Stars too much time.
Just gave the Stars too much time. Last thing about
I don't know if that's a good headline.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good headline or not. But we'll see. Where do you stand on, I don't know if you've done this in the past, have you done any studies on like the concept of rest versus rust? So, you know, while the Denver Nuggets are chilling in the NBA waiting for a winner in the Heat-Celtics series, so too now are the Florida Panthers, who just swept their way into the Stanley Cup Finals, right? So they're just hanging out. Like, do you tend to think generally that there is a macro statement about that, or is it just different from one example to the next?
I think in general, you know, 3-4 days off is kind of the best case scenario for a team. It's enough rest, but not too much. And I think based on what I've looked at, when goaltenders specifically have 4+ days off or you know, 5+ days off, things get a little dicey at that point. And I don't really think it's a good thing. So I think that Florida's kind of in it now. They're, you know, I mean, it's the Stanley Cup final, the date is set. So they know how much rest they're going to get. And I guess they probably want this one to go 7 games and hopefully have these two teams beat the crap out of each other for another 2 games. Right. Because yeah, it's not going to change the start date of the Stanley Cup final, regardless of whether this Western Conference final ends tonight or not.
All right. Give me your series prices again. Projected ones, Panthers, Knights, Panthers, Stars.
60% in favor of the Vegas Golden Knights, so roughly
minus 150,
and roughly -130, 57% in favor of the Dallas Stars if Dallas goes on. That could change. I mean, 2 games is a lot of hockey. We could learn a little bit more about these teams, and that could change a little bit, but that's what I've got right now.
Sergei Bobrovsky is like, I got your -150 and your -137 over here. Andy, appreciate it. Thanks, and we'll talk through the finals as well.
You should try to pronounce Bobrovsky the way Charles Barkley did.
Oh yeah, how
over
do
the
it?
Weekend.
How did he do it again?
Like Bobrovka, Sergei Bobrovka, Bobrovka. Like that. Yeah, it was good.
Oh man, he's the best. That's for sure. We love Barkley. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it, man.
All right, take care. Thanks, guys.
Andy McNeil at Digital Gambler on the old Twitter machine. By the way, Barkley, Kelly, going through this series, the Heat and the Celtics, back to that for a second, has been pretty interesting. Because he was just murdering the Celtics through the first 3 games, you know, as Shaq was like, this team is just, they're just not a championship team, not ready for it. And then he changed to, you know, again, emphasizing, well, if Boston plays their best, they can win every one of these games. He was actually consistent about that the whole time. What was interesting after Game 6 is he's like, ooh, I don't know now. Like, I was ready to say, you know, he was like, this was Game 7 for Miami. But after Game 6, the way that Miami almost won that game, he sort of changed his tune about Game 7. He's like, oh, this could be pretty. I'm paraphrasing now, but this will be pretty competitive, he thinks. Oh, we still don't have Kelly's mic. I'm sorry. I forgot. I just forgot about that. We thought we had Kelly's mic. We don't have Kelly's mic. We'll come back. We will talk baseball with Paul Sporer. He joined us. Memorial Day was always the day when we were growing up where they said, okay, now you can look at the standings. Now you can look at the standings because these are likely to manifest. We actually have numbers to back that up. We'll ask Paul about who's for real, who's not. That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, laces up with a playoff parlay insurance offer. Place a same game parlay of 4 legs or more and get back a bonus bet up to $25 if you miss 1 leg. Enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds, specials, and parlay selection features throughout the postseason. Log in now or sign up and opt in to get back up to $25 in bonus bets if 1 leg in your same-game parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and over, please. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Tennis plays that remain today, by the way. Sloane Stephens with the win early this morning and plus money, but still have on the men's side the over. And by the way, again, these are up on the VSiN.com/picks page. Some of these have been up for 2 days already because they spaced the first round over 3 days at Roland Garros in Paris. And then some have been up since yesterday. Bill 80 with the White Glove Service. Thank you, Bill. So we have the over in the Davidovich Fokina Arthur Field match, over 35.5. I wouldn't play that higher than 36 or 36.5 at the most. Someone's tweeting in that they had a 37.5. I wouldn't go too crazy on that. Elisabeth Cocchiaretto, if you listen to the Beating the Book podcast, you know that I feel she's undervalued in almost everything. She's at plus 102. Have her coming up in her match. Is it Pliskova or Kvitova? I can never remember. Stevens played one of them, and then Cocchiaretto plays the other. And then Elizabeth Mandlik I have a little later on. You can probably get a better number on Mandlik than I did. She's taking on, Walter, a little later on the show. A little later on this morning, I should say, right after the show.
And then Kvitova for Cocchiaretto.
Yeah. Stevens beat Pliskova, I believe, earlier. So there you go. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Elvis Toast Patterson. Uh-oh. Hold on. What just happened there? Uh-oh. There go my tweets. Elvis Toast Patterson. Gilly, happy Memorial Day. Did you get your... By the way, do you say happy Memorial Day? I don't think you do.
It's always one you bat around.
Yeah. Did you get your Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence tickets yet? $700 for nosebleeds. You and Kelly got 2 months to break this fight down. Radio gold. Okay, we'll work on it. Los Vegas, 514. He says, yo, ask young Kelly if he thinks it'll be another 8 years before Emiliano Grillo wins another tournament.
Probably a good chance.
Dom Perry Yan. Happy Selection Monday, Gil. NCAA baseball tournament. Let's go. Hashtag Clemson. Hashtag UT. Hashtag NC State. So I don't have NC State. But let me just, about the ones that we played. Clemson, maybe getting the number 4 national seed. They will get the 5th seed, if not, among our bets. Alabama is hosting a regional. Auburn is hosting a regional. Texas kind of sucked in conference tourney play, by the way. They are not hosting. Campbell got screwed. That was the biggest headline on hosting. They should have gotten a hosting gig, but the committee gave it to Auburn, so we're kind of okay with that because we also have an Auburn bet. Selection show, as Dom Perignon is referring to see who is in what regionals, is in 1.5 hours, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. We'll read more of your tweets coming up. Paul Sporer, kind enough to join us from Fangraphs, at Sporer on the Twitter machine. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm well, Gil. How are you?
Doing very well. What's the baseball cap? What do we got there?
This is Arizona Diamondbacks.
Oh, I didn't see it. There you go. Bend down. There you go. I like it. Okay. I mentioned right before the break, I said it's Memorial Day. We used to say, hey, Memorial Day, you get to look at the standings for the first time. Because before that, it was too much of a small sample size. But there's actually numbers to back this up. This is from the Elias Sports Bureau. 58% of teams, 90 of 155, that are in sole possession of first place on the morning of June 1st, so we're still a couple days away from that, 3 days away, have gone on to win their division in the wild card era. That's since 1995, excluding 2020, obviously the pandemic year. So let's take a look at this, if we will. The 6 teams that would be in the postseason in the American League currently, right now, if the playoffs were to start today, would be the Rays, the Twins and the Rangers as division winners. By the way, the Twins would have that 3rd seed. And for those who forget what the newish MLB playoff format is, 1 and 2 get byes. 3, though, the 3rd best division winner has to play the worst wild card team, and then 4 plays 5. And the teams that would be in the wild card: Baltimore, Houston, and the Yankees. Could it be, young Paul Sporer, that we know that the 6 teams already in the postseason in the American League, that none of them will change?
I mean, you didn't say the Detroit Tigers.
No,
they're just one game back in the division.
Yeah.
No, I'm a huge Tigers fan. For those that don't know, that's a joke for sure. I'm not sure that they're quite ready for prime time. I mean, it certainly could be. Those 3 division winners that you talk about are 3 teams that I definitely like to make the playoffs, even if they don't make it in via the division wins. I think all 3 of those teams are really, really good. And as far as the 3 wild cards, I think those are the faves: Orioles, Astros, Yankees. Those 6 are probably my faves. I was short on the Red Sox. They're better than I thought, definitely with their pitching. I thought they had good hitting, but no real pitching to speak of outside of like Sale. And I actually had some excitement for Hauk. He hasn't even really been a big reason why they're succeeding. So they've impressed me to the positive there. I do like the Mariners. I do think that they're viable contenders. Of course, the Jays, you know, I'm a sucker for the Angels. So there's definitely some contenders, but if those six teams made it, I don't think anybody would bat an eye. That's for sure.
If I said there's one really sneaky team in the American League that deserves either a futures bet or a yes, no playoff, at least a yes to make the playoffs, would the Mariners not be that team with that starting rotation?
It'd be the Mariners or the Angels. Again, Gil, I'm just not going to quit the Angels. I am a gigantic moron, if nothing else.
Okay. Gigantic moron, if nothing else.
I can't help it with them. They have so much talent. They are above 500 right now. They just got swept by the Marlins at home, though. Yeah. It's like anytime you start to have a positive feeling about this club, they do some dumb crap like that. So, you know, again, I do believe in them. I do believe they have enough talent. I think the Mariners are probably the safer pick between those two because that pitching is just so strong. I really love what they've got going on. Gilbert stepped forward. Miller, his ascent has been incredible. Kirby hasn't really taken a step forward with the strikeouts, but it hasn't stopped him from being very successful. So, yeah, I really like what they're doing. They basically replaced Robbie Ray with Bryce Miller. That's a heck of a one-for-one replacement there. They don't miss a beat.
Yeah.
Usually you take a guy like Robbie Ray out of a rotation, even the non-Cy Young version, and that's a big loss because that dude eats up innings, gets a bunch of strikeouts, and he's damn good. And they just replaced him with Bryce Miller, and they do not miss a beat there. That's so impressive for them. They need the offense to start supporting the pitching a bit more, but yeah, I do like that Mariners club too.
Okay, so before we get to the National League version of this, which is much more interesting, I think, let me just riff on the Rookie of the Year stuff because you talk about Bryce Miller, potential AL Rookie of the Year, let's say, obviously not the short shot currently. In the National League, Jason Weingarten, our buddy, has been just – we've been talking about Elly De La Cruz, it feels like, every single day for the last 30 to 60 days. He will be playing in the bigs. I have – if he wins the National League Rookie of the Year sight unseen, right, thus far, if he wins the National League Rookie of the Year, you won't see me for a week. Let's just put it that way. So 30-1 is where I got him at this weekend. Jason has him even higher. Are you as bullish in what you've heard on him?
In terms of the overall skills, yeah, I think we've seen kind of the blueprint for this in O'Neal Cruz. We know the downside with the swing and miss. He could come up and be a total flop. He could come up and take over the league. It's not to cover my bases or fence it on it. That's just really the volatility of swing and miss like this. When he's connecting, he's unbeatable. We're seeing like a muted version of this with a guy like Christopher Morel, for the Cubs right now. He's killing it 100%. He's in a hot streak, but I think his plate skills will catch up to him. Cruz does take walks. De La Cruz takes walks, so does O'Neal Cruz. That's the thing they do different than Morel. But a gaudy skill set like this is super exciting. Since he's a wonderful park, I would not be surprised if Elly De La Cruz came up and basically pulled an Aristides Aquino, but it was more legit. Whereas Aquino filtered, you know, tapered off after that, Elly would just kind of keep it going. Like that's the kind of heights that this guy can reach.
All right, we got 60 seconds to do all of this. So real quick, in the National League, it's much different. It's Braves, Brewers, Dodgers as the division leaders right now. The three wild card right now would be the Diamondbacks by far, but then it would be the Marlins and I guess the Giants. Yes, the Giants.
Wow.
That's going to change, right?
Yeah. Big time. I mean, I like the Marlins. Their pitching's great, but I don't believe in their hitting. And unless they find more, that negative 41 run differential will come to get them. And I'm sorry, I don't really believe in the Giants either. I know the Mets are lurking. I still believe in the Padres, even though that's probably the team that I'm going to say is the sneaky one. If numbers have come down in concert with their 24-29 record, I get it. It's frustrating, but they're still -5 run diff. I think they're going to be fine overall with their talent as far as a team that's not in right now. I think the Mets will probably be fine too. Both those clubs, the long slog of the 6 months, they will start to rise to the top, in my opinion.
DFS, 20 seconds, go.
Give me some Nathan Eovaldi, Taj Bradley. I like a lot of Texas. I love my Tigers, like I said, but Texas is a really good team, good offense. I like their pitcher, so I'm stacking Texas, and give me Taj Bradley against the Cubs as well.
All right. Who would have thought that the Rangers' Cy Young candidate is not DeGrom, it's Eovaldi at this point.
Right.
You've loved for years.
Right.
Paul was Eovaldi before Eovaldi was cool. Thank you, Paulie.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Appreciate it, man. Raheem Palmer on the NBA next from The Ringer, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.